This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
The Black Friday and July event from Dell Technologies is here with great offers on trusted technology. You'll also discover huge deals on new AI-ready laptops like the Dell 14 Plus, featuring Intel Core Ultra processors starting at $699.99. Save on top accessories, plus enjoy fast, free shipping and other benefits. Upgrade today by visiting Dell.com/deals.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Let's go!
Take it by the captain! Second home run today.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
First pitch to Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is crushed. Here comes Lux with the winning run, and the Reds walk off with a series victory over the Padres.
Earlier on the show, ESPN NBA reporter Dave McMenamin, Jaguars linebacker Joshua Hines-Allen. Coming up, legendary Hollywood producer Jerry Bruckheimer. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
All right, everybody. 844-204-RICH, number to dial here on the program. Lots to discuss with the Steelers and the Dolphins making a fat trade, rare trade for top defensive stars in their prime years, one for the other. And the fallout with TJ Watt looking for a new contract. Tom Pelissero, our colleague, who's on every single week, just tweeted out literally during the commercial break that the Steelers have no intention of trading TJ Watt, and their focus remains on extending his contract. He's due $21 million this year, which is obviously not what he's going to play for. And I would counsel Steeler fans to take a beat, take a breath. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. Jerry Bruckheimer just had a great chat with the legendary producer in our green room. This is his third appearance on the show. Love talking movies with a guy that has basically puts, you know, billions upon billions of dollars worth in revenue generating content for all of us to enjoy on the big screen and small screen. And it's great. He's been on the show before, but never while he's got the number one movie in America, right? F1, the movie, is in theaters nationwide right now. And it is a heart thumper, and it is exactly the sort of stuff you want to see in the summer. And he's going to be joining us here on the show in just a matter of moments. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. He also, did you see he announced a pick for the Seattle Kraken?
Nice.
Yeah, they had a whole bunch of, like, Barkley announced a pick for, I believe, for the Flyers. And Adam Sandler in full Happy Gilmore gear for the Bees, Bruins.
Right? Yeah, that's awesome.
Joshua Jackson did it for the Ducks, you know, so.
Yeah, that's cool.
The NHL draft got it done.
WWE's Bailey introduced it for and the Sharks.
That? Yeah, Jerry's the only one who owns the team.
That's
part owner of the Seattle Kraken.
That part. So.
844. By the way, I tried, the first time I met him was at a dinner party. And I tried it because he was still in the process of naming the team. Mm-hmm. I told him the name at the Seattle Grunge.
Oh, good name.
He took it under advisement and then went in a different direction. So after that happened, I'm like, you should name the mascot Grunge. Don't you think?
I don't hate that.
That's good,
actually.
Too.
Grunge the mascot.
You came up with a good. Don't ever let him tell you you can't.
Yeah, that was good.
Listen,
it's like one out of.
It's still one.
Excuse me.
Right.
Excuse me. How dare you?
We have a whole, good job, Brock.
We have a whole consulting firm out of this.
Brock, it's one.
So we've talked quite a bit about the Steelers side of this trade. What about the Dolphins side of this trade? First things first, they're getting a very talented player in Minkah Fitzpatrick back. Last time they had him, I don't think they really knew what the hell to do with him, quite frankly. So they sent him to the Steelers for a first-round draft choice. This time around, Anthony Weaver, who is the defensive coordinator, who I believe got a ton of run in the interview process and has a head coach written all over him, I kind of dig what he's going to do. the bottom line is on the defensive side of the ball, and Minkah Fitzpatrick will absolutely help 100%. Certainly if Jalen Ramsey and the team were not going to be together anymore and the leverage appeared to dissipate and disappear, that they would be able to trade Jalen Ramsey for Minkah Fitzpatrick. And according to Tom Pelissero, they paid him $4 million bucks already this year. They added three more onto the deal, and the Steelers are picking up the rest of the contract, which runs through 2028. So that gets a ton of dollars off the books. And I imagine part of the reason, again, I'm not a capologist. I'm not locked in on the situation. I'm just sitting here in Los Angeles, admittedly, talking about it. The Tua deal had to change a lot of the finances about the future for this team. You know, and I don't know if that's what's going on. We only see the tip of icebergs in this world. I don't know why Jalen Ramsey had to go. Apparently he did to do it for Minkah Fitzpatrick. Not a bad swap. You get all that money off the books, and I guess you're going to just have to start from scratch and at the, you know, cornerback position. And right now you take a look at the Miami Dolphins depth chart, and they are young at the corner spots. They've got Storm Duck, by the way, great name. In year two, I believe.
Wow.
Year two, yeah. He's a second season player out of Louisville. And he's their one of their starting corners. And the other one is a kid they got in the fifth round of the draft. 150th overall, Jason Marshall Jr. out of Florida. So they're going to be green back there. And I think any Dolphin fan will tell you when it comes down to it, because they drafted Kenneth Grant, who I can tell you this, he's awesome. He's going to, and because, you know, Christian Wilkins is gone. This guy, Kenneth Grant, you are going to love him. And it's really about our Chubb and Jalen Phillips going to come back. Because that back end is raw with even with Minkah on the corners. Go hunt. Got to get home. Got to get home. And these guys have to be healthy. And it's really going to be about Tua's health as well. You know, when it comes down to it, again, if they and Jalen were going to divorce, to get Minkah Fitzpatrick back, I think is aces. He makes 15 and a half this year. You get $26 million off your books this year. Admittedly, already $7 million paid. And if Jalen Ramsey didn't want to be there anymore and you sign him to a three-year contract extension last September and he's under contract through 2028 and you could turn that into an improved draft choice in 2027 and Minkah Fitzpatrick, you know, it's good. But I would – you want to do what's more likely, Chris? Let's do what's more likely. Steelers or Dolphins go further this year. Who do you choose? A last longer situation. Who do you choose?
I don't think either make the playoffs. I guess right now I'd say Pittsburgh instead of Miami.
And they're also now, according to Tom Pelissero, having traded Jonnu Smith, now they're in the market for a tight end.
Right.
Which I would proffer to say July 1 ain't the time to go look for one.
Mm-mm. Unless you think, you know, Kyle Pitts maybe. A situation
it's
there.
It's possible, sure.
You know,
you've heard
his name thrown out there.
You're right.
Someone said, Michael Meyer on Las Vegas, maybe he's available.
Yeah, you're right. You know, and again, you talk about quarterback combination with the coach under pressure. Is it the QB?
It's both. It's both these teams involved in this trade. It's both of them. Yeah. They're both 1 and 2, I think, if you're talking about pressure for this year.
They're just fast as hell. They are fast as hell on offense. And if they're all healthy and they can be fast as hell on offense and win games by putting 30-something points on the board, they can beat you.
Yeah.
The Miami Dolphins.
Now, Tua's cap number is 14% of Miami's allotted salary.
Again, I mean, when you're paying somebody what they're paying Tua, they're going to have to make decisions. And I guess they and Jalen Ramsey were not going to be together anymore. Yeah. And there's Minkah Fitzpatrick back. And again, I think Anthony Weaver is going to know what to do with him. Now then, while we're on the subject of the Dolphins, before we bring Jerry Bruckheimer out here, it's our daily segment now. Who wants to be a Hall of Famer. And again, if you missed last week, we started doing this because it is that time of year to do stuff like this. If player, fill in the blank, no longer plays another game, as of right now, their entire career to this point, is it Hall of Fame worthy or not? And today's contestant in Who Wants to Be a Hall of Famer is Miami's Cheetah, Tyreek Hill. Ooh. Hit it.
Who wants to be a Hall of Famer?
Is that your final answer?
All right.
Am I reading this right?
Okay, very good. Yes, Tyreek, you are reading it right.
Oh, that's funny.
It is your time at age 31 with 141 games played already. 42nd all-time in terms of targets. Also, 2 yards shy of 11,100 in his career. That's 42nd all-time. His near 12,000 yards from scrimmage is 70th all-time. 82 touchdowns. That ranks tied for 30th all-time ahead of Ocho and playmaker Michael Irvin. He's a Hall of Famer. Now, the man's in terms of awards and accolades. He's a Super Bowl champ, 8-time Pro Bowler, 5-team first-team All-Pro, part of the 2010s All-Decade team, and he led the league in receiving yards once, 2023, pardon me. 6th player in NFL history with 2 career games of at least 10 or more catches, 200 or more receiving yards, and 2 or more touchdowns. How about that? The players are named Art Powell, Ocho Cinco, Amari Cooper, Hall of Famers Jerry Rice and Don Hudson, and Tyreek Hill. Is Tyreek Hill, Chris Brockman, if he does not play another game, a Pro Football Hall of Famer, yes or no?
I think this is pretty easy. Absolutely yes. Tyreek Hill has 4 first-team All-Pros. Calvin Johnson only had 3. Tyreek Hill, his highest finish in Offensive Player of the Year voting is 2nd. Calvin Johnson's best was 3rd. And Tyreek Hill has that Super Bowl championship with Kansas City in 2020. I think without a doubt, Tyreek Hill, yes, Hall of Famer.
He also holds a single-season receiving yards record for the Chiefs and also holds the single-season receptions record for the Chiefs. TJ Jefferson.
For as quick to hop on the yes as he, Chris, was, I'm going to hop on the no. This wide receiver thing, man, there's so many great wide receivers who aren't in the Hall of Fame. And right now, I just got to take a stand. If Torrey Holt and Hines Ward aren't in the Hall of Fame, then I don't see Tyreek Hill, if he never plays another snap, how he can be in the Hall of Fame. Now, had he stayed with the Chiefs, Chris, and got, you know,
multiple rings,
those extra rings, then I think that changes the argument for me, at least. And I go,
so the only thing missing for him to be a Hall of Famer as of this day, the only thing missing from when he takes the field for the Miami Dolphins in Indianapolis in week one to say there's a Hall of Famer on the field, is he's missing the rings, is what you're saying.
Well, I mean, Reggie Wayne, like I said, Reggie Wayne and Hines, they each have a ring, and they were all both dominant receivers. And
I don't know, man. All due respect to Hines Ward and Torrey Holt, Tyreek Hill is better than them.
I don't think Tyreek Hill is better
than
them.
The most dynamic, fastest, quick twitch, home run hitting receiver we've seen in quite some time. He had more yards in seasons after he left Kansas City. Best he ever did was 1480 in his rookie season. Top 1700 twice. He was on a 2000 yard pace. I think there's no doubt Tyreek Hill's a Hall of Famer.
I got to say right now, if he didn't play another down, I don't think he's a Hall of Famer.
He has better numbers than Calvin Johnson. More catches,
I get
slightly
it.
Less yards, more all pros, and a Super Bowl ring. What more does this guy have to do?
I understand you. But I mean, until others get in, it's kind of crazy with wide receivers.
That's what I'm saying.
Torrey Holt has got 13,382 receiving yards. He's not in the Hall
of Fame.
Henry Ellard's got more than that. He's not in the Hall of Fame. Anquan Boldin's got more than that. He's not in the Hall of Fame.
Then how did Calvin Johnson make it?
I just think he was so eye test.
He was so
over
dominant.
The top, like dominant.
What eye test is Tyreek not passing for you guys?
That's true, too.
Disrespect is real.
Good one.
I think Tyreek's dope. If we're playing this game and we're saying as of today, upon these other guys who haven't gotten in yet.
As of today, he would have to get some serious table pounding to get in the Pro Football Hall of Fame when these other guys,
Do you agree that Torrey Holt is a Hall of Famer, Chris?
I do.
Do you agree that Anquan Boldin is a Hall of Famer?
Yeah.
I do too. The fact that they're
but
not
But Tyreek
yet,
is better than those guys.
I think he has proven that he can dominate a game just as well as those guys. But yeah, man, I just think right now, by the way, he averages 79 yards per game, 78.7 yards per game. That's seventh all time ahead of Randy Moss and T.O.
Yeah.
Oh,
Rich is thinking.
I know. I'm going back and forth on this one. He's right on the edge. But
we talk a lot about eye test. That was the big thing for you guys in talking about Judge and Otani. Like,
if he doesn't play another down right now, he would get into the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
I just
think that that would be a tall order. You're already seeing guys like Boldin and Holt. They're in years, you know, whatever, waiting.
Yep.
They're not even, I don't think Boldin is even making the finalist
list. In Calvin Johnson with less awards, rings, catches than this guy we're talking about right now.
Calvin, I think, was a first ballot, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, I'm surprised that you guys are hemming and hawing.
No. I'm hemming and hawing. You're a definite no. You're a definite yes. I'm on the edge, and I think you just convinced me, Chris.
Oh! Look at that.
Yeah. I think you just convinced me. I wonder what Chiefs fans think. That's for sure.
Yeah, if he stays with the Chiefs.
Oh, I think if he's got three rings here right now.
That's what I mean. And
I don't think there was any chance in heck that was going to happen.
Yeah, but he never finished in the top five offensive player of the year with Kansas City. He did it his first 2 years in Miami. He was fourth and second.
Let's take a quick call. Brian in Springfield, Massachusetts wants to chime in. What's up, Brian?
Hey, Rich, can you hear me?
I can. What's up? What's on your mind?
So, I wanted to pitch to you my idea for a Jets movie.
Okay, great, because Jerry Bruckheimer's coming out here. It's not like he has any experience in taking pitches and making hits. So
yeah, that was pretty cool. I didn't realize he was going to be on the show tonight.
Well, Brian, he's in our green room right now. And so you're not just pitching me in the audience. You're pitching truly a legend. So what's your idea for a New York Jets movie?
All right, so it's called Killing Joe Willie, which I'm not advocating for.
Okay.
And you're familiar with the urban legend of him selling his soul to the devil?
Who?
Super Bowl III?
Joe Namath?
Yeah.
I've never heard that. I'm 55 years old. I have never heard this urban legend, but let's just say there is such a thing because you're making up this film. Go ahead, Brian.
A common one. Okay.
Go ahead.
So, yeah, the idea is that Namath sold his soul to the devil, and that's why the Jets are cursed. They're never going to win another Super Bowl until Namath dies. That's the bargain.
Brian, I got to tell you, the fact that it requires the demise of one of my favorite humans on the planet, it'll be a very difficult sell for me, but I'd never heard of that before.
I agree. Again, I'm not advocating for it. It's just kind of like a premise, right? So what the movie is about is a few Jets fans who basically, after years of heartbreak, they kind of just snap, and they set out to kill Joe Namath. And it's meant as a farce. This is a comedy, right? I know it doesn't sound like that yet.
It actually does.
Okay. I'm buying it.
The same people that were 80 for Brady? Now you may have me, right?
We get Fireman Ed involved.
Right. I get Fireman
Ed.
Okay.
Yeah. He's the ringleader.
Okay. Cool. And it's now like a hangover type movie?
The guy I picture is like the main character is he's kind of a lovable loser kind of guy.
Okay.
You know, your average Jets fan. He's kind of down on his luck. He's
Kevin James.
Overweight.
Kevin James? Okay, sure. All right, okay.
Actually, I'm picturing Steve from Stranger Things with, like, a beer belly.
Okay, look at Brian. Brian's casting.
Joe Keery.
He's writing.
I love it.
He's pitching.
Yeah, this is great.
All right, Brian. We're gonna bring Jerry Bruckheimer out here, and maybe after we talk about F1, we'll bring this up with him. Thanks for the call, Brian.
Okay, yeah.
There you go. Have you ever heard of that urban legend before?
No, I just looked it up.
It's
an internet thing, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I do like the title. Killing Joe Namath is a pretty good movie.
I don't like it.
No. Killing Joe.
You guys might not remember, but
I don't like it at all.
I casted right after Winning Time. I casted Boys Will Be Boys, Perlman's book about the Cowboys.
Right.
And I gave a whole
I remember that.
Remember I had Jerry Jones was Brian Cranston and Josh Brolin was Jimmy Johnson. And Hemsworth was Aikman. I had a whole
Meanwhile, it's
cast and crew written up there.
That's been yellow lit.
Yellow lit.
All right, let's take a break.
Yellow lit means it's still
I'm trying to give you hope.
Yeah,
give me Joe Namath.
All right. Jerry Bruckheimer, bring him on out.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
What if I told you you can take you and your family and your friends to the ballpark with such low price tickets, you can invest more in buying food and drinks, merchandise, and easily, on top of all of it, get a larger group to come with you? That's where Game Time Tickets comes in, the official ticketing partner of The Rich Eisen Show. Browse through that Game Time app and automatically you'll see features that become your favorites. Last minute tickets, zone deals. You see views from all seats in the venue. Lowest price guarantee, event cancellation protection. And the best part about it is you see your entire total up front, so no surprise fees hit you at checkout. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets right now with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use my code of EISEN for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Visit GameTime.co for restrictions. Again, create an account. Redeem our code EISEN for $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed.
Get in the zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today? Hey, that's the spirit. Right now, we're celebrating free with a free STP oil filter when you buy 5 quarts of oil and free Duralast brake pads when you buy 2 rotors. Like always, free battery testing, charging, and recycling at every store. Celebrate free at AutoZone, now through July 28th.
Get in the zone, AutoZone.
Restrictions apply.
Well, we've had this man on the show before, but never as his latest film is in theaters near you as the number one grossing film in all the land. Ladies and gentlemen, the producer of F1, executive producer Jerry Bruckheimer, back on the program. Good to see you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Great to see you, man.
Great to be back, always.
Congrats on this film. Just rave reviews all around. Brad Pitt in this film as a... an older racer getting back into racing as such for a former teammate, Javier Bardem, reaching out. You must be really, really pleased and proud of this one, Jerry.
No, it's, you know, when I was a kid, I used to go to the theater like every weekend. And this is the kind of movie we just made that I loved when I was a kid. It's big. It's exciting. It's romantic. It's funny. It's got amazing... cinematography. We captured this world of F1, and you don't have to care anything about F1 when you see this movie or racing, because it's an emotional story. It's like Rocky on steroids. It's that exciting, and the exit polls are phenomenal. 97% audience loved it. So it's, and the reviews are very good. So it's a movie that you got to go see. It's in a theater on the biggest screen. That's why we make them, to fill those theaters.
Yeah, I know. And Mike Del Tufo, our sound guy, you're going on Thursday because you want to go in a certain spot.
I got to go to see it. And the sound room. And watch in the sound room.
Right.
I go to one of my friend's places just to watch this.
Well, you got to pay for it, Mike. Don't say this. This man, I mean, we got to get box office receipts.
No. I go to a with my friend because he's got a movie theater we go to. The sound's the best one, and that's where you got to go.
And it's really great. Jerry Bruckheimer here on The Rich Eisen Show. F1 is in theaters nationwide right now, and it's directed by Joseph Kosinski, who also did Top Gun Maverick.
That's right.
So, you know, how did this come about? Let's talk about the origin of F1, the movie. Jerry.
After we finished Top Gun, Joe Kosinski came to me and said, I have this idea about making an F1 movie. I've been watching Drive to Survive. And they're focusing on the last place team, which is really kind of interesting. So he had conversations with Lewis Hamilton, who is seven-time world champion.
Yes, he's not driver. Nothing last place about him.
Right, because he wanted to act in Top Gun. But when Joe said, I need you for 4 months, he said, I have a day job.
Lewis Hamilton wanted to be in Top Gun Maverick.
That's right.
Do we know as what?
One of the pilots, I'm sure.
Okay. Why not?
So, but that unfortunately didn't work out. Mm-hmm. So we contacted him. He said, terrific. And we had lunch with him. And we said, we'd like you to produce this along with us. He jumped in. The next call we made was to Brad Pitt. And we have Lewis Hamilton. Here's the story. Brad said, I'm in. We pitched it to 9 different studios. And Apple wanted to make the movie the same way Brad and Joe did, which is for real. They trained for 4 months in various cars. They started with a road car, open wheel car, F4 car, F3, and finally got an R car. I mean, these things are rocket ships. They really are. They mold the seat to your body. People keep asking me, Jerry, have you driven one of these cars? You've got to be kidding. It takes a champion F2 driver a week to figure out how to drive this car.
So that's, Brad Pitt learned how to drive an F1 vehicle, is what you're saying.
That's exactly right. In fact, just recently, he drove the McLaren 2023 car and got it up to 197. In the movie, he only got up to 180. But can you imagine?
So was that in the meeting you had with Brad Pitt? He said right off the bat, I'll do it if I can drive? Or you suggested
it? Yeah, he said
it.
You got to do it for real. And Joe wanted to do it for, just like we did Top Gun. You know, we had 6 cameras in the cockpit.
Yeah.
This time we got 15 cameras around the car, 4 at a time. It's phenomenal. When you're in the car with him, and we showed it to the F1 drivers.
Yes.
We had a screening for them in Monaco.
Yes.
And they said, it's the first time I've seen a movie where I really feel the experience that we have being in these cars.
And so Brad Pitt spent all that time learning how to drive this car.
Exactly.
And you wanted to make it as real as possible. And is it true you shot during down moments of actual Grand Prix weekends to shoot some of the scenes here in this film?
Yeah, we went to 9 different races and shot the crowds and everything. We shot the starts, in the race.
Yes.
Also, we did, our car was on the track in between qualifying and practice. So Brad, the first time you really got in the car for us to film was in front of 140,000 people at Silverstone and 100 million people on TV to watch. And I'm sure he was nervous. Because you don't want to spin out. And
plus, you also have only one shot to get this right, right? I mean, you can't just say, hey, can we do another take to the people at F1?
And we had like 6 minutes sometimes to shoot a dialogue scene in front of everybody. And so Joe rehearsed it for 3 days prior to us actually filming it.
So it's like you're shooting it live.
Yeah.
Like you're shooting a film live is basically what you were doing.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Have you ever done anything like that before?
Well, we did some in Days of Thunder, but nothing like this. This was just phenomenal, hitting all the... We had to do it twice because we had 2 strikes. We shot 4 days, the actors went out.
Yes.
So the good news for us is Joe could shoot all the second unit stuff.
During the strike, you're talking about.
All the crazy stuff we did, he shot. And we went to every track and shot our stuff. We were in Japan, we were in Mexico, we were in Belgium, we were in Hungary, we were in England. It was a great experience. But you don't have to be an F1 fan or racing fan to love this movie. It's a real character study. It's just so much fun.
Plus, you know, I know you've said that a couple times here, and I understand when you're doing something about a specific sport that you want to let everyone know that you don't have to be just a fan of this sport to be into it, but you're making this at a time where the F1 is as popular as it's ever been, certainly in this country as well, because one of the places you shot, if I'm not mistaken, was Vegas.
That's right.
Which was new. That was only, I mean, that's not like a regular track either. They had to create that out of whole cloth when you went and shot there.
That was the scariest for me.
Why?
Having Brad and Damson get in the car and race there, because there's no runoff. It's a street track. So they make a mistake, they're in the wall. And I got
to
tell you.
I don't mean to laugh, but I mean, just because it's so unbelievable.
The happiest day for me on this movie was in Abu Dhabi. Mm-hmm. Brad did his last lap. He was done, and he climbed out of the car. And I was relieved, and it was his unhappiest day. because he loved it. He loved driving those cars. Mm-hmm. They're exhilarating. The way they corner, they get down low, and they stick to the track. It's just amazing to watch it.
So I got
to
ask this. Do you still get nervous watching Tom Cruise do his own stuff? Or you're already through all that because you've been there, done that with him so much.
Every time.
Every time.
Of course. I mean, hanging out of that plane, Mission is a terrific movie.
Yes.
He hangs out of that plane. That's been a 20-minute sequence. I think it took months to film it. Him hanging nuts. He doesn't have a fear, Gene.
No, I did see Brad Pitt and Cruise together at the premiere of the film, right?
Yes.
Did they talk about, you know, doing own stunts or whatever, or just screw it? They're their own men and their own actors and...
Well, Brad said I wouldn't do anything in the air like he does.
Right.
I like to keep it on the ground with Tom.
But still, I mean, going 190 something miles an hour. Yeah. Huh. So you still get nervous when Tom Cruise does stuff?
Of course. Of course. He's a good friend. He's an amazing actor and he risks his life on every one of the movies he makes.
So do you work only with people who do their own stuff, Jerry?
I mean, no. We have actors who are more sensible and make it easier on me, of course.
More sensible.
Sensible is a great word for it. Man, it is visceral. It is an experience, to say the least, F1 in theaters nationwide right now here on The Rich Eisen Show. Is it true that Joe Kaczynski and Tom Cruise working on a third Top Gun right now?
Yes, we are in the process of figuring out another one.
Okay. And that's because of the success of Top Gun Maverick, or that was the plan going into Top Gun Maverick?
No, it's always about the success. When audiences love what we do, we try to come back and give it to them again.
Any sense of where what the story is yet?
I can't talk about it yet, but it's a real good one.
Did you do Fight Club too? I don't know if that was an answer straight from Fight Club right there, but you can't talk about it because it's still in the lab, is what you're saying?
Sort of. Yeah, we don't have a script yet, but we're close.
All right. So what else are you working on?
Tom wants to do another Days of Thunder.
He does.
Oh, let's go.
Did we talk about this the other day?
We did.
Yeah.
It was the anniversary. Well, the anniversary was last week. 35 years. Yeah, 35 years.
It was 35 years on Top Gun too. Exactly.
So is that why or what?
No, we're just slow. We just didn't get a good script. It took us 35 years to get a good one on Maverick, and hopefully we'll get a good one on Days of Thunder.
Any chance Robert Duvall is in this as well? I know he's in his mid-90s right now, Jerry.
Look, we'd love it. He's amazing. He's still in great shape.
Okay. So it's a never say never from somebody in your position now. So what is the scoop on that? Where are we on a new Days of Thunder?
We're still working on ideas on that one.
Okay. We were talking the other day, based off of this, what movie do you think deserves a sequel? Do you have one that deserves a sequel for you, Jerry?
Yeah, I have another National Treasure, another Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh, yeah.
Working on all those.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Is it because Johnny needs a new house in the Bahamas? Is that what it is?
I don't worry about Johnny. He's doing fine.
I heard he still dresses up as Jack Sparrow, either in hospitals or for kids that come by his house in the Bahamas. Is that true? That's what I heard.
No, he just did something, I think, in Spain where he dressed up and went to a children's ward of terminally ill kids.
Imagine. That is amazing.
Yeah.
He's the full thing, too, right?
Oh, I mean, he does the makeup, the whole thing.
Okay. So you're... By the way, it's funny. We're sitting here, we're struggling. What movies could actually do that? And you're like, yeah, I got two of them. You're in the mix of doing all that. When will we maybe see this sort of thing?
Who knows?
Okay.
Soon, I hope.
That's the idea. Jerry Bruckheimer here on The Rich Eisen Show. You announced a draft choice for the Seattle Kraken.
Yes, that was a thrill.
Okay. So when did you learn about that one? When did you?
Well, I think we had a good draft.
Okay.
Based on the experts that I've read, that we had an A or an A- in our draft.
Right.
So our guys did a great job.
Why get into sports ownership?
I love hockey. That's it. I love it.
You just
it's a great
love
sport.
Hockey.
I played it as a kid, poorly, and had a game here in L.A. for 25 years until COVID. And then we started making this movie, and I've been out of L.A. for 200 days the last 2 years.
Right.
Racing around the world.
Literally and figuratively.
Yes.
Pretty much. And so you were there up on the stage, you know, introducing a draft choice.
Yeah, wasn't that nice?
You know, and what do you know about, what do you like about the kid that you drafted?
He's really skilled. He's really a skilled player. Big and skilled. That's what we need.
Now you're hands off, right? As an owner,
of course,
right?
Of course.
You don't tell anybody what to
do.
Or you hire the right people and you just let them do their thing.
We had Hans Zimmer do one of their themes.
Well,
so that was nice. How do you like that?
Take that, James Dolan. Yeah. You know, sorry to mean to get you in any trouble with James or anything like that, but that's pretty cool that you can basically reach out to Hans and say, "Give me a theme song for that sort of thing." Fantastic.
And the music on F1 is amazing.
Yeah, right.
The album, I mean, it's got Doja Cat, Chris Stapleton, Tate McRae and Ed Sheeran. It's got a phenomenal soundtrack, Burna Boy. And it's international because F1 is international.
Do you have another movie maybe of your that you wouldn't mind seeing another sequel to?
I have a couple. Gone in 60 Seconds and Crimson Tide.
Oh, yeah.
I was literally about to ask about Crimson Tide.
Oh, my God.
I swear to God, I was literally about to say, what about Crimson Tide?
We have a really good director and writer talking with the Navy right now.
Oh, yes.
About what's going on under the water.
Okay. Do you have any idea who you would cast in Crimson Tide?
Not yet. Well, we have Denzel.
Right. Yeah. Would he, I mean.
If we give him a good script, I think he'd do it.
Yes. That is.
Yes.
I'm telling you, man, because I watched that movie back after Gene Hackman passed away,
right.
You know, and the scene with him and Denzel when it's all going down is just two
heavyweights.
Yeah. That's the only, I know that's, it's such an overused sports analogy when it comes to acting and film, the two of them going at it. Were you on the set when that was shot?
Of course.
Okay.
Look, you had Tony Scott, phenomenal director.
Right.
We had Quentin Tarantino and Robert Towne, two of the greatest writers in our business.
Yes.
And directors writing on that movie and wrote scenes for that film. I don't know if I'll ever replicate that kind of writing for a film.
Right. But these guys, did they read it word for word? Did they ad-lib, anything like that for that particular scene? Because that scene itself, where it's really all about to go down and Gene Hackman loses it, and Denzel makes his move.
It's amazing.
I will watch that over and over and over again.
Gene, the way Gene worked is he would sit with his wife over the weekend and memorize the whole week's script, mm-hmm. his pages. And when he showed up on the set, he didn't like improv because he had it all memorized.
Okay.
And so he just dove into it, and Denzel dove into it too. Both of them really went at it.
Do you remember how many takes that scene took?
No idea. Okay. It wasn't much, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, because I mean, that's a crackling good
badass movie.
Yeah, for sure. So that's possible for a remake as well. I love it. I can't wait for it. And in the meantime, everyone go see F1. Unbelievable. Lewis Hamilton is in it.
He's in it.
So
and was our advisor. I mean, this is the kind of things that we did on this movie. He would tell us, you're going into turn three at Silverstone. I'm hearing you're in third gear. I'd be in second gear. So we change it. He said, on turn five, you can't pass. If you try to pass on turn five, you'll have an accident. We used that. We had an accident on turn. I mean, we took all the little nuances, and everything in this movie actually happened in F1. So if the purists say, oh, this would never happen, you go back in time, it happened. Now, some of the stuff that we do, Sonny does in one race, might happen over a whole season.
Yes.
Because we have to condense time. But overall, I mean, we see people dressing up in uniform going to see the movie. They're wearing their helmets and
that's awesome.
Suits.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
That's so cool.
Well, you got to love it. Fandom, right?
Yeah.
You know, the fan is short for fanatic or root of fanatic. So you're saying you're shooting. Hold on a second. I'm just trying to pick up everything. Okay. Just put together all the pieces of what we just had a conversation. So you have such a limited time of shooting these race scenes. Because you're shooting in between, you know, in dead periods, right?
Yeah, practice and qualify.
And you can't ask F1 for another take.
No.
The time is your time.
That's
you
it.
Got it. And so Lewis Hamilton is giving you notes on what you're shooting in your limited time.
Right.
Based on what he's hearing, because he knows what a third gear and a second gear sounds like. And then in your maybe second crack of doing it one more time, that's how you do it.
Exactly.
Wow. Man. That's unbelievable. That's Jerry.
No, it's one of the most accurate films about motor racing, especially F1. And the interesting thing that happened, it took us a year to convince F1 to do it, but it took us even longer to convince the teams. There are 10 teams, two drivers to each team. It's the only sport where your teammate's your competitor. Yep. And that's the story we wanted to tell. So during that season, Mercedes built our car along with Joe, who helped design it. And that season, Red Bull and Mercedes were just going at it. They hated each other. So Red Bull, for sure, was going to be the villain in their minds. So it took us almost a year to convince all the teams that the competition is within our team, not against you, your teams.
Sure.
And we took them along every step of the way. What we did is we took footage from Top Gun and how we put the jets in, because we didn't have adversary jets. We took the F-18 and skinned it another jet. Mm-hmm. We took one of their races and put our car in their race. We skinned one of their cars. And we showed it to the drivers. We showed it to F1. Every time we did like a trailer, we showed it to the drivers first and the teams first. So we met with every team principal and every driver. It's not just me. It's Brad, Joe, and myself. And one in London, for 12 hours, I sat in a room with Lewis, our writer, Joe, Jeremy Kleiner, who works with Brad, and Brad, 12 hours just going through every single line of the script to make sure we had it right.
So Brad Pitt is part of the politicking and the arm twisting.
He was in there full force.
Like he was in the car.
Yeah.
How about that? F1, again, in theaters nationwide. Jerry, always enjoy this time. Thanks for coming.
Thanks, Rich.
Everyone go see this film. By the way, I don't know if you want to put it on a marquee. My oldest son, Xander, said, my heart was thumping out of my chest.
And he's a 16-year-old, right?
He is indeed. He's 16-year-old, about to be 17, and he wants to see it again. So there
you go. It's one of those movies. It's emotional. It's funny. It's romantic. It's everything you go to the movie theaters for, because it's big, it's loud, but it hits you right here in the heart.
Right. He said it was thumping out of his chest is what he said. And he doesn't really watch F1 very much. He likes the Mecham car auction, but he doesn't really watch the F1. That'll be your next movie, right? I mean, what's next? You've done NASCAR. You've done F1. What is it? Funny. What are you going to do? Funny cars?
Hopefully another time. Well, we're working on something with Will Smith right now. So
okay.
We'll see if that happens.
Anything you want to drop a hint on?
Not yet, but soon.
But it does involve wheels?
No wheels.
Okay, no
wheels. There'll be chases in it.
Okay, there you go.
Hey,
it's a Jerry Bruckheimer film. During the filming of The Outsiders, you turned 18 and the other boys in the cast pranked you by trashing your hotel room by saran wrapping the toilet and spraying fire extinguishers into the room. Is that a true story?
Absolutely true. It was like, that was my college experience. I was turning 18. It would have been the equivalent of going away from home for the first time. And that's my fraternity. Those guys are my frat brothers.
What a shot.
And into this
seven
day.
Seven across, man. Same. Jeez, look at that.
It's a good group.
Look how tough Tom Cruise is trying to look in that photo.
Dude, Tom Cruise was such a baller. He was probably one of my closest friends, and he was so great. And I always looked up to him, and he always had these cool things he would come up with. And I remember he was the first guy that ever came up with this conceit of tightening the titles of the movies he was in to make them sound badass.
Like
he did this, you know, the football movie, All the Right Moves?
Yeah.
But yeah, man, when I was making moves, and I was like, he's
That's
a badass.
It's baller.
It's so baller. But then, you know, it was a problem when he'd be like, yeah, when I was making Cocktail, it was kind of a, you know, I liked.
No. The other one's no good either.
It was long.
Yeah, when I was in Tail.
When I was in Tail, you can't do it either way.
Can't do it either way. Yeah. It's no good.
When I was making.
So you'd go like Wing? Is that what you do when you did TV?
No, when I was doing West.
When you were in West.
You know, when Marty Sheen and I were doing West.
You know, on the set of Boy, me and Chris Farley.
No, yeah, when I was on a Boy, in Oxford Blues sets up just blues.
See, it's important to choose. If you choose the wrong one, it's not as good.
There's always one that's cooler. Like when I was doing Recreation.
Yeah.
Doesn't it? But if I'm doing Parks.
Right.
Instead of Parks.
You did Parks.
Yeah, man. Amy Poehler and I in Parks. We laughed all the time. On Parks.
On the set of Wayne, I was just, you know.
And by the way, you want to talk about Tom Cruise, too. This was the fact that blew our minds when the last Mission Impossible came out, and he was running all over
amazing.
London.
It's right?
And
the best movies ever.
On like a broken ankle that had just healed or whatever. Is that he is right now the age in these movies doing this that Wilford Brimley was during Cocoon. That's a fact.
That is.
That's boom, like mind blowing.
It's mind blowing. It's.
I don't know what it is. What makes it mind blowing is that Tom Cruise is doing that at that age, or Wilford Brimley was really that young in Cocoon.
I did a movie with Wilford Brimley. He was the first great character actor I ever worked with. It was a movie called Hotel New Hampshire. What are we doing on that one?
So when you did
Hampshire?
No.
When I was doing Hampshire, Blaine.
It's better than Hotel. No. When you did Hotel.
How about just when I was doing New?
When you did New, right?
When I was doing New. When I was working on New with Brimley.
Oh, my God. Did you notice during the interview with Jerry Bruckheimer, who's clearly been hanging out with Tom Cruise for a very long time, called it Mission?
You did.
When we did Mission.
Yeah, we all kind of picked up on that.
Oh, yeah. When I was doing Mission.
Yeah, yeah. Tom's on Mission.
I can't wait to go
Mission
see
was great. Nah, Mission. He's
yeah,
killing.
But each mission has a different name. Like, there's a Ghost Protocol.
Yeah, Ghost. You know, Reckoning.
No. I can't wait to see this film.
Yeah. I mean, this is one you got to, and by the way, yeah, you got to get popcorn, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's no doubt.
Have to.
Right. You got it. I mean, this is a popcorn eater, right?
It's popcorn. It's peanut M&Ms. It's maybe a little Sour Patch Kids, and you're going to work. I mean, it's like a 2-hour and 40-minute movie. Like,
by the way, when he was talking about the street race with Vegas, right? And how you're in the wall if you're, I remember
like, you guys went in like,
those were like
car.
Real. Those were like real streets. They had to fill in like potholes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Brad Pitt's going 180 miles an hour over. Man, Brandon in upstate New York wants to. Is this Bean? Is that the? Well, I'm sorry. It's Western New York where Brandon Bean is. Brandon, where in upstate New York are you?
I'm from Rochester.
Rochester. Well, wait a minute. Doesn't people from Rochester consider that Western New York as well, Brandon?
I would say upstate New York.
Okay. Central.
I'm not saying Western, you know. We're not, a lot of Bills fans around here. I'm in the behind enemy lines out here.
All right, Brandon, what do you want? What's on your mind?
Oh, I'm calling in to do the win-loss game today.
For?
The Miami Dolphins.
Oh, in upstate New York.
Plot twist.
Surrounded by Bills fans, huh?
I don't know about you, but that looked like money.
What do you got? Where are you from originally?
I'm from upstate New York here. I'm from Rochester, born and raised. But my father was a Dolphins fan.
Okay, there we go. Give him some music. Then this is important because, you know, they just traded for Minkah Fitzpatrick and no Jalen Ramsey with Jonnu Smith. What happens week one at the Indianapolis Colts, Brandon?
Week one's going to be a win.
1-0, home for the Patriots.
That's going to be a win as well.
2-0 at the Bills in your neck of the woods on a Thursday night.
So I have been to... Being in upstate New York, I've been to 10 Dolphins games, 7 of them in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. They've lost every single one, and that's going to continue this year.
I'm
going to be present at the game, and they're going to lose.
Brandon's going 0-8.
Wow.
And he says the Dolphins are starting 2-1 home for the Jets on a Monday night.
That's going to be a win.
3-1 at the Panthers.
That's going to be a win.
4-1 home for the Chargers.
That will be a win.
5-2 at the Cleveland Browns.
Win.
That's a sick. Wow. This is now a 6-1 start at the Falcons.
I'm going to go win.
7-1 with a 5-game win streak. Home for the Ravens on a Thursday night.
That's going to be a loss.
All right. Winning streak over. But it's now 7-2. Home for the Bills.
I think we're going to get them. I think we're going to get them at home. That's going to be a win.
8-2 into Spain against the Commanders.
That's going to be a loss.
All right. 8-3 off the bye, home for the Saints.
That's going to be a win.
9-3 at the Jets.
That's going to be a win.
10-3 at the Steelers on a Monday night, a reunion with Jalen Ramsey.
That is going to be a spicy game now after today. That is going to be a win.
A win. What have we got? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11-3, woo, home for the Bengals.
That's going to be a loss.
11-4 home for the Bucks.
That's going to be a loss.
Oh, 11-5 at the Patriots.
My girlfriend is a Patriots fan, and she would be upset with me if I didn't say this. I think this is personally my take. They're going to lose that one as well.
That's 3 losses in a row. Very O. Henry-like twist at the end right there. 1-2. So you're 11-6 with 3 losses at the end of the season, limping into the playoffs.
You were once 8-1.
Says right. Brandon. In upstate New York.
Brandon, enjoy the dinosaur barbecue, buddy.
There you go. There goes Brandon. 11-6, I think, is a very... they'd sign for it, but 3 losses in a row going to the playoffs. Fascinating. What a way to start the day. What a way to wrap up June, huh?
Wow.
Right here on the program.
Yeah, what are we going to talk about on June 30th?
Well, a lot. And more Jaguars tomorrow, as Tony Khan will be here from the front office and, of course, AEW Wrestling as well. Another in-studio guest tomorrow.
Love
it. A lot of fun. That'll wrap up this edition of the Rich Eisen Show and June 2025. Well, we will see you Tuesday.
The United States Soccer Federation presents the U.S. Soccer Podcast.
Inside the opening 45 seconds. What a goal! With that cannon of a left foot.
All even at one.
Never miss a game.
What a start for the United States.
Shot from distance. What a goal!
Never miss a moment.
Exquisite from the San Diegan.
Can he finish? Yes, he can!
Yeah! The U.S. Soccer Podcast. Follow and listen on your favorite platform.